Thank you. We will announce that.
I've asked that question for almost 21 years.
I'm teasing you.
Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the regular business meeting for March 8th, 2016. The time right now is 7:01 p.m. Ms. Smoot, will you call the roll, please?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Hanford, Cutaback, Rasmussen, Camp, Davis, and Scarborough.
Thank you. And I think we received word last week that Councilmember Gamble would not be here. Is that correct?
I think so.
Without objection, we'll consider his absence excused. Okay, seeing none, will everybody please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We do not have need for an executive session this evening, so we are going to move on to announcements and presentations. And before I do that, please let the record show that Councilmember Gamble is here. He just came in at 7:02. Welcome, Councilmember Gamble. So, announcements and presentations. We have a presentation this evening from the Monroe Community Coalition. Thank you very much for coming this evening.
Hi, thank you. I'm just going to load up the PowerPoint that I dropped under the podium.
Oh, no!
Well, as we get the equipment set up, I just want to tell you, last time I was here actually presenting on behalf of the coalition was January 2015. The coalition was about 2 years old, just moving into its second year. And the entire first year we had spent just building a strong foundation. So we conduct business using a framework endorsed by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration called the Strategic Prevention Framework. And that framework basically says, before you do anything in the community, you need to know what's going on. It makes sense. But it says you start by assessing what's happening, and we do that through a variety of means. We use state healthy use survey data. We have our local data here. Healthy use survey is administered every 2 years in 6th, 8th, 10th, and 12th grade. It's a research-validated instrument, and there are a series of questions in that survey that are designed to winnow out students who aren't telling the truth on the survey. So what we look for is about an 80% valid survey return rate before we can start generalizing those outcomes. So we started looking at our survey data first at that time. We were conducting community interviews. We were conducting community interviews and using state archival data to look at what was going on. Also, archival data, as you may or may not know, is just a collection of databases that are implemented statewide, DSHS data, law enforcement data, any government services data, and it's just available for us to look into. And so when we presented to you, it was not the greatest news. We had just assessed what our risk was. Let's see if I can get this. I'm just going to cheat and push the button if you don't mind. So we were assessing where our risk was, and I'm going to leap into that. So if you came to a meeting today, these are just a few of the logos of agencies within and without the community that are represented at monthly meetings. Compass Health, CMAR, Evergreen Health, Cocoon House, the public school system, Housing Hope, NAMI, the Monitor. Chris is an amazing ally. Where's Chris? Chris is an amazing ally. Had to have her. The ESD, Northwest Educational Service District 189, Boys and Girls Club, YMCA, Monroe Police Department, Take the Next Step, Cold Weather Alliance, the faith community, parents and other community members, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, the health district is a great ally, Snohomish County. So over the last 2 years, we've really worked to bring all of these youth and family serving agencies and advocates, people who are not agency affiliated, to the table so that we can start to make a difference here. So in 2015, we were at a crossroads. Our funding comes from the federal government, used to come through the state and then through the county, and then the counties statewide received a share based on an algorithm that they had. So Snohomish County Human Services decided to step away from the Community Prevention and Wellness Initiative. That's what brings funding to us here. And so we were really looking for an agency in the community that could step up. And so in March, you see the headline in the Monitor, Monroe Community Coalition Restructures, and it was really looking at pausing all of the positive momentum we had been building in order to transition from the county as a fiscal agent to a local fiscal agent. And in the end, Monroe Public Schools stepped up. The headline says it all, Monroe Public Schools Safe Substance Abuse Prevention Program. There really was no hesitation on their part. They just assumed responsibility, and we've been moving forward ever since. And then I left employment with the county to stay working with the coalition, because the amazing things that are happening here are worth being a part of. So I was at the county for almost 11 years and decided to come here. So you get an idea of where our funding comes from, what that map looks like. It starts on the top with the federal prevention block grant. There are also another prevention grant called the Partnership for Success grant. We also receive a portion of dedicated marijuana account funding from Initiative 502, and we receive a small administrative fund or funding from the state general fund. All of those funding streams get channeled into the Division of Behavioral Health and Recovery, and it is distributed on our behalf to Northwest Educational Service District 189, who provides school-based prevention and intervention services. We identify students who may be at risk or may actually be experimenting, and then try to connect them with individualized services to prevent it from turning into an addiction. The other half goes through the school district to the coalition directly, where we're trying to put together strategies that are based in science. And so I already described this model of what we're doing. We assess needs, we try to build capacity within the community. Once we have assessed needs, we make a plan, and we have a pretty behemoth plan on the website if you ever get a chance to look there. Then we move into implementation, and we're always evaluating what we're doing so that we can know we're using public resources as effective stewards, and so that we can make course corrections as we go on. This is kind of the continuum here of substance abuse services. This spiral goes from, or obstacle goes from, promotion, so just trying to build a community that's ready to address substance issues if there are any, through prevention, treatment, and recovery. Our slice of the pie is this right here. We are a primary prevention coalition. Our funding doesn't allow us to go into treatment or recovery services. Our purpose really is to delay initiation of first drug use for as long as possible. We know that the earlier a student experiments with drugs, the more likely they are to develop chronic addictions as adults. And we use this model of risk and protective factors. So just like you may consider your risk factors for dental decay, do you brush your teeth? No, if you don't brush it enough, you want to brush more. Do you floss? No, then you want to floss more. Or for heart disease, are you exercising? Have you cut out smoking? Have you changed your diet? So there are risk and protective factors that predict accurately engagement in substance abuse, and that's what our focus is on. So we identify during that needs assessment where our community is most vulnerable, and then we target our services and strategies according to evidence in order to reduce those specific risk factors. This is a study done by the feds about a decade ago, just looking at marijuana use prevalence based on the number of science-based risk factors. And what they found, not surprisingly, is as risk factors increased in a young person's life, so too did the likelihood that they were using marijuana and other drugs. What they also found, though, is that this effect, these risk factors, were buffered by the presence of protective factors. And so all of these lines show you that as protective factors increase, so the blue line are the students with the fewest protective factors, the red line and black line, the students with the most, the more protective factors there were in a young person's life to buffer the risk, the less likely they were to engage in substance use. And then in our community, we're specifically vulnerable because of availability of drugs, or what youth perceive to be availability of drugs, low neighborhood attachment or community disorganization, favorable parental attitudes and involvement in problem behaviors, academic failure beginning in late elementary school, and friends who engage in the problem behavior. And this tree really is our model. Basically what we say is, if we address these root causes, we're going to prevent these problem behaviors, and we're going to see less of this in the community. So that's our 90-page strategic plan in one slide for you. So I'm going to show you where we are now. We're going to move through this really quickly. Please interrupt me if you have questions. But one of the things that we knew we were specifically vulnerable to compared to other communities like us, and other communities around the state and county, is our 10th graders perceived very low chance of getting caught by law enforcement for drinking. And we know, according to research, that threat of enforcement has a deterrent effect on youth. One of the early things that we did, school board reached out to law enforcement, and they set up a program whereby K-9 unit came to the school on scheduled appointments and would scan the parking lot for drugs. These are really well-publicized events. The idea is not to catch people, but if we do catch people, to connect them to services. It's more to help students understand the very real threat of enforcement if you're using substances you shouldn't be. And after 10 years, what we saw after 8 years, we saw a really steady rate of perception. After the first year of implementing the program, almost a 10% decline in that threat. So we know the threat of enforcement is protecting our kids. When we first came to the community, about every other student was vulnerable to substance use because of their parents' attitudes. This is at the time when we were discussing I-502, and our rates now are more aligned with what they are statewide. So still high, but not high compared to others, high by our personal standards. When we look at measures of alcohol availability, this chart basically shows you where students are reporting getting it from. The big takeaway here, though, is the significant decline in the number of students who are reporting getting alcohol or other substances with permission from parents at home. So at 4%, we have one of the lowest rates in the state, and that has happened at a rate that is statistically significant, so it happened beyond chance. And so I would like to think that the coalition and that collaboration I showed you at the beginning has had a significant impact on that. Another area where students are at risk is their perception of the number of friends who drink. In 2012, we had a really high rate compared to the state. Almost 3 out of 4 students were reporting, or 2 out of 3 students were reporting that their best friends all drink alcohol, and the actual use rate was around 24%. Because we've been working on changing that perception, we've seen results in our healthy use survey. 2014 is the most recent data available. That's why I'm showing you 14 data. When we met, that data wasn't available to us last January, so I'm showing you this tonight. But since the coalition's been active, we've significantly influenced the perception of the number of young people who drink and the actual use rates.
Councilmember Cutterback has a... Councilmember Cutterback?
No, I'm sorry. Do you mind a question now? Or
please, yeah.
Okay, can you go back 2 slides?
Oops. That would be... I'm not going to... 2 slides.
One more.
We'll get there.
One more.
One more?
Yep.
Okay.
So just about when I saw that definitely going down to 4% from the 15th for the 10th graders, but it looked like the 8th graders went up significantly were
you? Yep, there was a statistically significant increase in the number of eighth graders who were reporting. You know, we're still trying to understand why.
Yeah.
So, Patsy, you're good. You're good.
No,
like, you look at data.
We see it.
So we don't know why.
Okay.
What we have done is implemented an evidence-based program called Life Skills Training across 8th grade in both middle schools.
Okay.
This is the most effective prevention program in middle school in the world, according to the research, and the Institute of Medicine.
And when you can you go one more slide forward now? So in this, because this is pretty, I think, relevant, do you share this with the kids, with the teens?
So we don't share it in this form. What we're trying to really impact with them is the social norm. So if they're expecting that most of their peers are drinking or most of their best friends are drinking, then they're already compromising their healthy values and beliefs. They're drawing a line in the sand. Okay, I'm not going to use, but I don't want to be the only one who doesn't use. And so when Susie asked me at the party tonight, if she asked me, I'm going to cross the line. What we try to do is correct that norm. So even though it looks like you think most of your friends are drinking, we say this number, less than 3 out of 4 are drinking alcohol or using substances.
Yeah, I just think for them to see that they perceive that 49% are drinking, but it actually only is 18. And for them to go, really it's much less than I think. For them to understand that, I think would be a big deal.
You're right on.
Thank you.
So, our community norms, so community conditions that influence youth risk, are community norms that basically we're asking how long do you think it is for someone your age to drink beer or wine or hard liquor regularly, and how many of your best friends again. So these norms that are protecting youth are getting better and better. They're at our best rates in more than a decade. In terms of perceived availability of drugs, as that perception has gone down, so is the perception of availability and perceived availability, which is a significant influence on youth decision to use. If it's everywhere, you're going to use, is at its lowest rate in more than a decade. So this is incredible news, and the trends like this aren't happening statewide, they're happening here. And so, increasing the threat of being caught, changing perception of parental attitudes and permissiveness, in combination with the implementation of evidence-based strategies and mobilizing the community to address local policy issues, have led to our lowest substance use rates in at least a decade. So we are at less than 1 in 5 10th graders reporting alcohol use, and about 13% of 10th graders reporting current marijuana use. These rates haven't been here in a long time. They're nowhere, but they're here. So let me show you a couple of emerging issues. One of the issues that we're facing right now is the rapid spread of e-cigarette use and paraphernalia. These are products that are marketed toward children, gummy bear flavorings, cupcake flavorings, Batman e-cigarettes. I mean, I just showed you a couple of pictures. It's pervasive and it's out there. So what we've seen is this significant rise in use, where less than 7% of seniors were reporting e-cigarette use in 2012. 2 years later, we're at 26%. So this is huge. One of the myths that are out there is that e-cigarette devices prevent students from using, or they assist students and other people from making the switch from conventional cigarettes, combustible cigarettes, to supposedly safer devices. And the research would challenge that. But as e-cigarette use increased, cigarette use didn't change. So kids are still smoking, but more are starting to initiate with this device. Youth depression remains an issue in our community, particularly the jump between 8th grade and 9th grade. But we're still looking at 1 in 3 ninth and tenth graders reporting a clinical level of depression, depression that significantly interfered with their lives and stopped them from doing their usual activities for more than 2 weeks in a row.
Jim? Councilmember Scarborough?
On your previous on the eve, the vaping, no, one more back.
Yes, sir.
Your last comment was more are using it to initiate the process, so they're not using it to not smoke cigarettes. They're starting by vaping and then maybe end up at cigarettes.
Yeah. So through the Health Use Survey, I could do an analysis that looks at the number of students who report using both devices. And actually that number is about right here. So the students who smoke cigarettes generally are also using e-cigarette devices, but we have a whole class of youth emerging where they haven't used any other devices. They're using e-cigarettes. And the danger here isn't just significant nicotine exposure, but youth are vaporizing alcohol, youth are vaping marijuana, oils. It's just a general substance delivery device. And it's delivering it in a method that their bodies are designed to take in.
Thank you.
So hold on.
Mr. Engel, Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Just a few questions on the e-cigs. Are those, if you can go back one slide.
Sorry.
That's okay. Are those, first of all, are e-cigs just as addictive as regular cigarette smoking?
Well, nicotine is the addictive compound, and youth generally, if they're able to obtain nicotine, are using it in higher concentrations than what you'd find in a cigarette.
Okay, and then is secondhand smoke from vaping just as dangerous?
So there's emerging evidence that it is. I wouldn't say that it's settled science yet, but what's coming out right now is that the particulate density in vape smoke or vapor has more particles per whatever that measurement is than does combustible cigarettes. And that's partially because of the increased nicotine dosing that you can accomplish through
filters. Okay. And then do our city laws, this is more of a question or maybe for comment, but do our city laws apply to e-cigarettes as the same as regular cigarette smoking?
Well, we were just required to put up no smoking signs or no vaping signs outside the public facilities, so yes, it does in that context.
So within 20, they have to be more than 25 feet away from the doors of businesses to vape currently?
The public buildings.
Public buildings. Restaurants. Things like that.
I can tell you that this is in an area of real concern for the coalition, and we're hoping to build a partnership after tonight's meeting to see what we can do together to address vaping in the community. I'll share some data in a few slides about what our community told us that they wouldn't mind seeing happen.
Sure, one more question. Is there a certain age that vaping is allowed or not allowed?
Sure. You can purchase 18 and up. There's a lot of misconceptions about what's happening. Students are reporting to their parents that they're just inhaling flavors, not nicotine, but parents aren't savvy enough to know that other substances can be used with them. We're getting a lot of reports from our Hispanic and Latino community about youth e-cigarette use. One of the issues that we have is that there are many students in the district who are 18, statewide who are 18, who are buying for their friends. So the age of 18 isn't really a barrier for purchase for most.
So is the illegal part the Batman canister or the actual e-cigarette?
For youth under 18, both. Yeah, I mean, that's really the best answer I can give you, Councilmember Hanford. Both are for youth under 18. The real danger is initiation with a device that will train them to use others, and I have a lot of emerging data showing that link and transition. I didn't bring that tonight, but I'd be happy to share it with council later. And just the exposure to substances that the device isn't intended to be used with.
Thank you. I'm just trying to get educated.
I will come back any night to talk with you or any member of the council. Anxiety is another issue that our youth are facing here with more than one in two 10th and 12th graders reporting clinical levels of anxiety, being unable to stop or control their worries. These numbers declined slightly on our off-year survey, so the school district is implementing an off-year survey that mirrors some of the questions on the Healthy Youth Survey. So we're glad to see that some district initiatives are starting to show impact and some partner initiatives.
And I'm sorry, Councilmember Cutterback?
Well, maybe you're going to talk about this on the anxiety and the depression. Is there any indication of what's causing that?
Sure. So in terms of depression, we're still looking. One area that we've been specifically looking at is bullying, and we find highly disproportionate numbers between students who have not reported bullying and the rate at which they report depression, and students who have experienced bullying and significantly higher rates at which they experience depression. The same link holds true for anxiety when we look at our district data. We know there are a lot of factors, just the workload students have today, the pressure to perform well on tests, trauma. I mean, if you were at Paper Tigers, you definitely saw that link between trauma and depression and anxiety. So,
thank you.
Yeah.
Oh.
So this is a trend that's starting to show.
Councilmember Campbell.
Yes, sir.
So I was just, the only other thing I wanted to pile on to that is a lot of the stuff you're seeing, 8th to 9th grade, 8th to 9th grade, 8th to 9th grade.
Transition.
Is that transition. And I guess the piece that I would wonder is that, because we have so much data that shows that trend, I know they're trying a lot of different things to help with that transition.
Yeah.
If we try to inquire on what is it beyond, I mean, we know all the other factors, but I mean, there's a thing that sticks out to me that, because I'm going through this right now with my daughter, is making the transition from 8th to 9th, and they're planning they have this feeling that they're planning their whole life.
Yeah.
Trying to talk her through that. It's okay. You can't change your mind.
Yeah.
And for those that may not be going the college route, being forced into a system that is gearing them to go to college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
8 to 9. And you know what? I don't want to do that. And I'm a nothing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just would be very interested in, you know, that year right there, that 8th to 9th grade year.
We know the 5th grade to 6th grade transition, so elementary to middle school, and 8th grade to 9th grade, middle to high school, is the most dangerous transition period in a young person's life. Everything's changing, they're being exposed to new norms and new situations, lots of pressure, and they're just looking for ways to cope with what's going on around them. They don't have the coping mechanisms yet that an adult would, who's facing comparable stress. So these are some areas that we're working on now. So suicide is trending in the right direction. The rates are still higher than we'd hope. Not alarming compared to other communities, but alarming to me as a dad and as somebody who works with students. So on Healthy Youth Survey 2014, the most recent data available there, one in four 12th graders had reported contemplating suicide, one in five 10th graders, one in five 8th graders. Our 2015 numbers are lower. 15% of 8th graders, 17% of 9th graders, 11% of 10th graders, so pretty significant decline from year to year. The data is so new, we don't understand why that is, but there are a lot of initiatives that are happening at the school as a result of recent completed suicides in the community that we hope are helping to influence these numbers. Our trend for the last 10 years basically looks like this. So I didn't want to spend a lot of time here. Just wanted to show you that both 8th and 10th grade are starting to trend down again. So it's good to see that trend when we look at the big picture. One thing I wanted to bring to your attention is just something that may challenge our norm. Like I showed earlier, we're experiencing our lowest use rates in more than a decade. And I just really want to ask you to consider how we as a community can balance economic development initiatives with sending the message that adults don't support underage drinking. And so when I just did a Google search for beer and Monroe, you know, we've got this article from last year, Can Monroe Become a Beer Mecca? Farmers markets, the parade, the fair, all of these public events that are exhibiting beer gardens. This is not a judgment. This is just notifying you that this type of community acceptance of alcohol has adverse impacts on youth use rates if we don't send a strong message that this is appropriate for adults, it's not appropriate for young people. So just wanted to put that out there. Just wanted to throw this one in too. Connection really is the key to helping kids. This just shows a variety of domains where youth are at risk, from grades to alcohol use to depression and anxiety. And what this shows is that in green, the number of kids who can identify one adult who can help them fare much better across these behavioral areas than kids on the Healthy Youth Survey who report no adults who can help them. So just the presence of a helping adult changes outcomes for our kids. And these are our kids, it's not, this is state data, but our data is similar to this. I'll just really quickly end this. We do an annual community survey every year of adult attitudes and perceptions. This is a question on our annual community survey that asks, consider these problems facing youth, which are most significant. Depression in 2015 is the number one concern of our community. Marijuana use and alcohol round out the top three. So this is a survey of 230 adults. It closed in December. We asked if people thought there should be legal consequences for substance abuse possession and provision. Do you think there should be legal consequences if the police catch a youth drinking alcohol or using marijuana? About 80% of folks thought there definitely should be legal consequences. The others in our other category talked about the need for education and alternatives. When we asked the same question, do you think there should be legal consequences if the police catch an adult providing alcohol to youth or providing marijuana to youth? It's unequivocal. 98% of respondents, 97% of respondents think there should be a strong response, legal response, to adults who provide the minors. We asked the community, do you think our city should have rules that place limits on e-cigarette use and e-cigarette devices, such as by restricting the way they're advertised in Monroe? We gave a specific example of sandwich boards advertising e-cigarettes, prohibiting sales within a certain proximity of school buildings, raising the minimum age of sale from 18, prohibiting free sampling, and then others. Others all were around education. So I can tell you that the Board of Health accomplished this in November for us, and this one as well. So sales within proximity of school buildings, prohibiting free sampling of e-cigarette products and juices are banned in Snohomish County. But the board didn't address how these products are advertised. And right now, e-cigarette products are not subject to state preemption. Tobacco is, e-cigarettes specifically are not. There were a couple of bills pending in the legislature this session that look like they're now dead in committee. So preemption will not extend to those unless they're resurrected and passed. So this is what the community told us, really strong support for regulating how they're advertised here. 89% of respondents. Raising the minimum age of sales, still a super majority. I was really surprised by the responses, to be honest with you.
Mr. Nigel? Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Can you clarify what the state did for the prohibiting sales within a certain proximity of school buildings?
Sure. So Board of Health in July started having public listening sessions in Snohomish County. In July, Pastor Michael and I attended a listening session in Everett. In November, the Board of Health released a draft of its proposed ordinance imposing smoking in public places laws to e-cigarettes. And then later that month passed those after final comment were received from the public. And so those ordinances do prohibit sales within a certain proximity of schools and do prohibit sampling, free sampling, as well as a variety of other measures.
Councilmember Cutterback.
So I think there was a bill down in Olympia to raise the age for regular cigarettes.
It died in committee.
Oh, it died in committee. Okay, I was going to ask for an update. Okay.
Yep.
Thanks.
So it made it past the first cut, but not past the March 3rd second cut.
Go ahead.
So, bottom line, coalition programs, the type of stuff we do in the community directly with people, reach a finite number of community members. The most effective prevention, and what we're really trying to accomplish, is population level protection. So when prevention reaches the entire population, we help whole communities. As the executive and legislative branches of government in Monroe, you guys are uniquely positioned to create population level change through policies that support healthy norms and reduce availability of drugs. So I'm not making any specific recommendations tonight. I have coalition members who would love to come and host a work session with you and talk about what's on their mind. We're charged with moving forward with environmental strategies in the community. So actions that change norms for the environment in which youth access substances. So we're ready for you. I have two coalition members here tonight. Pastor Michael, who is our community relations member, and Carrie Boone, who is our co-chair. I didn't know if you wanted to take 30 seconds since I've talked so long and address the council.
Okay, I'll start it out. Quick. I just want to emphasize how the community partners in our community are just amazing, and they're all part of the community coalition. The Monroe Monitor has really, really worked. Boys and Girls Club, the YMCA, and all of the community partners are tuned into all this stuff and have played a significant role in seeing the change. The Monroe High School, the youth coalition that they allowed to be at the Monroe High School, the Monroe Schools, Hidden River, Park Place Middle School, utilizing Joe and the coalition in a lot of different ways. Take the Next Step, one of the most effective outreach community partners, reaching at-risk kids in an amazing way. Youth groups, the Monroe Police Department have cooperated, helped us, given us perspective, and been cheering us on. CMAR, Evergreen Hospital, just an amazing array of community partners, and it's exciting. And you guys, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, thank you very much. Oh.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I as part of the coalition, I represent both the faith community and parents. And as a parent, I have five kids, and they're kind of spread, Chain Lake, Frankwanger, Park Place, and the high school. And so I feel like we're touched, our family is touched by everything from kids who are depressed. We've had friends of my kids who have struggled with so many of these issues, and I've seen kids that have come through our house that are homeless, who you would never think, and are struggling with all kinds of challenges. I hear all kinds of questions from parents about vaping and what is this, and my kids telling me that it's not addictive, but they're just vaping water. You know, there's just so much confusion, and I think that the statistic that Joe shared shows so much about the importance of perception, and I think there's so much of an impact to be had by this group. It's exciting to be a part of the coalition. It's a unique group with so many different facets of our community represented, and I appreciated so much at Paper Tigers seeing so many of you and so many of our school board and so many different parts of leadership in our community represented, because it's exciting as a parent especially to see our community coming together to address these issues that are so important. So I just want to thank you for being so supportive and looking out for our youth, and in so many of your personal jobs as well, the things that you do for our community to improve and make it a better place for our kids. So I look forward to having more conversations, especially about vaping, about the things that we do, events that we have in the community, and how those look to our kids. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sherry.
Councilmember Hanford. Thanks for the opportunity tonight.
Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thank you. So just to kind of get, I feel like there's like a call to action that has been placed before us. Most of us, or several of us, saw the Paper Tigers movie. We're deeply impacted by that. I know from my life outside of City Council, I've received emails that they're training foster parents in the ACEs studies and training that we learned about in Paper Tigers, that's being taught to foster parents as well because of the challenges that they're learning through that. And thank you very much for your presentation tonight. You just ended with, there are things that you'd suggest, that you'd like to suggest to us at a future date. But I'm very open to hearing what those are. I think action is needed to formally invite them back, so I'd be looking for a second to that at some time in the near future to somehow take action. So,
okay. So we will have them come back for another presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's good.
Thank you.
I would just add before, just one more thing. So we just learned today that the state is presenting this community prevention and wellness initiative to the Governor's Review Council in April. They were asked to identify one tribal community and one non-tribal community to showcase. Monroe was selected.
Oh, wonderful.
So April 18th will be in Olympia talking about the great work that's happening here. It's a big
fantastic.
Honor.
Wonderful.
So you guys are a part of that. Thank you.
That's great.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right, we're going to go ahead and move on to comments from citizens now. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. There is a sign-up sheet outside, and while Ms. Smoot is getting the sign-in sheet, is there anybody that would like to come forward to speak to the City Council this evening? Seeing none, we'll see if anybody put their name on the list that isn't coming forward.
Fighting.
There's only so much I can do until Ms. Smith's back. Okay, there's nobody signed up to speak and nobody's come forward. So we'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Motion to approve consent agenda. Second.
I have a motion to approve the consent agenda from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember, was that Kemp?
Mm-hmm.
Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. The next item that we have on the agenda is under unfinished business. This is AB 16029, discussion, strategic financial planning. This is a continuation of our discussion from a couple weeks ago. And so I'm going to go ahead and open this up. So this evening we'd like to get direction from council as to what additional information might be desired for the medium and high prioritized operations and capital needs. We're also making a request from mayor and council to reconsider putting the planning tech at low priority. We just had a senior planner just resign to go to another job. Before that occurred, we had a we have a large number of applications that are coming in, and after talking more with community development staff and with our administrator, it's a position that we do feel that we need, that we would like to have you move up to the medium or high for more consideration. But with that said, council, are there any items on here that you would like additional information on, or how would you like to proceed? Councilmember Scarborough.
I had a question on the $1.60 threshold. As I look at my tax rate that we just got in the mail, we're at $1.47. Does that sound correct?
No. City, I believe, is around $1.15, yeah.
Okay, so when we put a $1.60 threshold on it to that $798,000 threshold that we talked about 2 weeks ago, you know what I'm talking about? Sort of?
Yeah.
Okay, so does that mean that we can add the difference? We can add 45 cents to get to $1.60 to get that 780 something thousand without having to go over that? We're not going to add another $1.60 to that $1.15.
No, the city's portion cannot be.
Okay, and then looking at those figures from that last meeting we had, that almost $800,000, am I correct? Was the $1.60 threshold to some degree?
That's the difference of what we would get if we...
Yeah. And to get that, I took a few things out of here. I won't go into them right now. But also, to get the $1,039,000, just to bring the roads up to snuff, if you will, then that would add probably another $1.60 or another 50 cents or so, and then some of those other things we could conceivably be up there in that pretty high range. Am I reading that all fairly correctly?
That is correct. You would have to go to the voters in order to go that high.
Right.
But yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other council members have any other questions? Okay, and in conferring with our police chief, you'll note on here that there are two police officers that are requested. That was out in a five-year period, and we're looking at one next year and one the year after. Okay, and we do have some of the sales tax that we can look at for that also, for 2017. So the two police officers, really that would be one for 2017 and one for 18. Councilmember Scarborough.
And that is over and above the two we just confirmed last week?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Councilmembers, do you have any other questions about this? Councilmember Cutterback.
So all these positions that are listed on this list are all full-time equivalents? I remember the list before where we had like a part-time or a...
Part-time parks and...
Yeah, so are all these on this list full-time?
No. Some are seasonal workers.
Besides the seasonal, but the...
The
horsemen are all full-time.
Wasn't it the permit?
I thought there was a question for one of them, because member, Councilmember Gamble, you agreed it seemed like it was high for a part-time person, and we have to go
we
check.
We have a part-time person in one of the positions now. I think that's what you're talking about.
Oh, and then it was bumping it up, and it seemed like a high amount that we were bumping it up because they were already part-time.
Was that the permit tech?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's the permit tech that's shown on here is low at $80,000.
That's a full-time position for an additional $80,000.
Yeah.
And all of this is looking at coming out of the general fund. Can any of it be used for from other funds? No, everybody's shaking their head. So just general fund. And then, I mean, I think having some type of a formula to go through when we're making decisions on budget, like what we obviously first off legally required to do. We had discussions on the accountants, and that was recommended by the auditors, or we're missing certain gaps, but we can. So, you know, what's legally required, then what fits into obviously our long-range goals of the comp plan, any strategic planning we've talked about, any goals that we've set over the next 3 to 5 years, what is most important to the city? Is it, you know, downtown core, is it code enforcement, is obviously keeping our community safe? I mean, where, you know, that's where then you put the majority of the funding, is what are we trying to accomplish as a community? So when I just look at a list of names, you know, positions and money, we don't have enough money to fund everything. We have to start making choices. Obviously, we're legally required to do some things. That should be first and foremost. But then what are we trying to accomplish over the next 3 years? And then our staffing should reflect that. So maybe having a discussion, you know, looking at our comp plan, what are the things that we're trying to achieve in the next 3 to 5 years from that, or what bubbles to the top that's the most important, and then looking at then making some of these choices.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, and that's what I liked about the spreadsheet that we used last time.
Right.
Being, because it does exactly what we're talking about, and I think, you know, really the thought process was, okay, we wanted to assign high or medium priority to stuff, at least from the last conversation. I know I missed the last meeting, but when we talked about it previously, it was, let's identify high and medium, and then maybe whether it goes to the finance committee or wherever we want to, let's attack it in a smaller environment where we can look at different options based off of that spreadsheet and the direction that council is giving, saying, hey, this is where the area is important, and propose different potential solutions. Hey, this is what it would look like if we went after these. This would look at this. And then in addition to that, the other thing we talked about is identifying other potential funding sources, right? So we know the main lever that we have, and what's great is it's built into that, into the spreadsheet that Brad built us, and I'm highly anticipating the one that has the colors changing and, you know, balloons going off and stuff like that. But the one that we have now works great. But looking at what other potential funding sources, you know, are there, or what are the, you know, grants, if it's associated with any sort of, you know, roads or whatever the case may be, that we just heard tonight on the police officer side of the, you know, for the tax associated, well, what percentage 165? So is it an all-in or is it not? You know, and maybe we address that in a smaller environment so we can come back and say, okay, here's the reality of the situation as we look to set budget at the end of the year. That was my thought. And that, isn't that what you're looking for, is direction? Of,
yep.
Where should we put that focus or that rigor that was just described, and kind of get it down to the ones that we really want to put that rigor towards?
Right. So this was scheduled for the Finance Committee last week. The Finance Committee didn't have a quorum, so we weren't able to go through with that. That happens. We brought it here tonight to see if the full body of council wanted to work on it. If the council would prefer, we can look at a special Finance Committee meeting, or your next Finance Committee meeting is April 5th. Mm-hmm. In terms of end of year, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to give budget instructions to the staff by June, and and that's the timetable I'm working with. I know that you're not going to be approving the budget until December, but staff begins its work July 1st so that I can get you by the state mandate a budget by October 1st. So, you know, if you're able to do a special committee meeting, or if you think that April 5th you can get everything done, you know, that would allow us maybe to bring it back to council and still get some direction for the 2017 budget by the end of May, early June, so that we can move forward with that.
We're shooting for a June time frame.
Yes, sir.
I mean, unless you guys think I'm crazy, I don't think April. If we go with the April 5th meeting, as long as we commit, and I was part of non-quorum, so I apologize for that. I had a family emergency, but I think we could still do it.
Yeah.
We just stick with the April 5th. Because we would have an April 5th, and we would have a May, put us on track for June adoption. I think we'd be okay.
Okay. And it wouldn't be adoption, it would be direction.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, I know. I just thought.
I'm not back yet.
It's okay. Okay, does anybody else on council have any comments? What I will understand is that we will take this to the April 5th committee meeting. Mr. Basil, do you have anything?
Nope.
And all I would, you know, and ask is in regards to that is between now and April 5th, any and all ideas from a staff perspective that they may have on funding sources, and put our creative hats on, or anybody up here.
What staff has done is they've brought forward I think a pretty comprehensive menu of options for funding sources. And so, you know, we didn't hold back on any of the potential things that the council could consider, everything from property to utility to sales to per employee. There's a variety of things that the council could consider if they wanted to. And that'll be something that staff will be happy to go through.
All right.
Yeah. Councilmember Cutterback?
Brad, remind me, for some of this, for some of the road improvements, can we use the TB?
These numbers are in addition to the TBD money.
Okay, so this is on top of that.
Yes.
Okay, thank you for reminding me of that. Thanks.
Okay. Councilmember Scarborough?
On the 43 space proposal, do we have an adversarial relationship with the owner of that piece of property that may preempt that from being even a question?
So there may be some discussions related to the acquisition of property that we might want to discuss in a different form. Mr. Brazel, your thoughts?
I think that that's an appropriate question that Brad could probably answer.
I can answer it now. Yeah.
Okay.
He's indicated a willingness to sell. He hasn't said how much he'd be willing to sell it for.
Okay. Thank you. Yep, you're welcome. Any other comments or questions from council members? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and we'll bring this back to the Finance Committee on April 15th. All right, the next item is new business. This is new business number one, AB 16030, discussion downtown events and public art policies. Mr. Farrell.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
So in order to encourage special events to occur within the newly renovated downtown core, and to commission a piece of public art to be sited within the same downtown plaza area, the City Council budgeted a total of $15,000 for 2016 to accomplish both initiatives. Staff has researched and drafted the attached policies to implement these programs. The first policy is a downtown events waiver policy for city services. So a fee waiver policy is proposed for city services in conjunction with approved special events held in the downtown. Feedback from event organizers pointed to the costs associated with required street closures for the events, with costs ranging from $600 to $800 plus as an obstacle to their event budgets. The policy puts in place a mechanism to address this through a fee waiver for city services of up to $1,000 per event until the annual budget amount is exhausted. Staff proposes that up to $5,000 of the 2016 budgeted amount be utilized for this new program, which could support up to five special events there. It is important to consider the aggregate interruptions to downtown businesses, which is factored into the proposed limit of $5,000. The goals of this policy include to encourage existing and new special events to occur in the newly renovated downtown core that promote tourism, foster economic revitalization of the downtown, and to provide cultural activities for residents. I'll move on to the public art policy that's proposed.
Okay, and Mr. Farrell, before you do, we may take these as separate topics, but let me see. Councilmember Camp, did you want to ask questions on that specifically?
Are we going to discuss this later? Or?
Yes, unless you want to bifurcate the issue, which is fine.
That's fine. We can go ahead. We can go come back.
All right. Please continue. Thank you.
Thank you. So the proposed public art policy is to guide the purpose, goals, selection criteria, and procedures for public art in city-owned areas. The policy, when approved, will provide support to staff for staff to implement a call for sculptors, which a draft of that is attached as well, to commission an outdoor sculpture sited within the newly renovated downtown plaza area. Staff has researched similar art policies and programs throughout the region and has also consulted with the Monroe Arts Council. President Leonie Stowski, the president of the Monroe Arts Council, is also here, and when we get to discussion, she'd be happy to answer any clarifications on art. Thank you for being here. Staff proposes that $10,000 of the 2016 budget amount be utilized for a downtown art sculpture. Submitters are free to solicit matching funds, but not required. The unique pervious sidewalk system, coupled with the uncertainty of a final art sculpture product's installation requirements, as it may vary, may produce a need for additional funding of up to $2,500, we estimate, for a structural base support foundation. Both of these draft policies our city attorney has reviewed them, and he provided some feedback, some comments after these have gone out in the packets. So I want to update you on, I've reviewed his comments, and I have some suggestions in these two policies. So I'm going to jump back to the downtown events waiver policy for city services. And so in that attachment, there's a purpose, goals, and then eligibility. And in the eligibility section 3, the first bullet is must have an approved special event permit. And I recommend we'll replace that with language that states the applicant otherwise satisfies all applicable criteria for issuance of a special event permit pursuant to Chapter 5.28 of the Monroe Municipal Code. And in a further change here, edit is in the 1, 2, 3, 4th bullet point, fee waiver for city services up to $1,000 per event until annual budget amount is exhausted, is to edit that to state a fee waiver for city services up to $1,000 per event until exhaustion of fee waiver aggregate limit established annually in the city's budget. So it's just a rewording of that bullet point. And next, the second to last bullet point, there is applicant must demonstrate matching funds or labor in kind. I would propose actually to delete that bullet point there. It could be a little problematic, especially in the area of labor in kind. And I said recently gotten these comments back from the attorney, so probably have further discussion with the attorney, and there may be discussions in there. But, and then lastly, in this policy is adding a final clause that states nothing in this policy is intended to alter the city's codified standards and procedures for waiving service fees for First Amendment events, and then as a reference of Chapter 5, Section 28, Subsection 110. Public art, don't need to go too far in depth. That is the attorney our city attorney is reviewing our policy, and staff will have discussion with the city attorney. The concern expressed is that since art is an expression protected by the First Amendment, we just want to ensure that the parameters of this draft policy does not infringe upon the First Amendment. So when this is brought back, we can expect to bring this back to you in a week, that we'll have reviewed and ensured that there's an issue there. And before I open it up, I just want to state that approval of both policies is scheduled for next week's March 15th City Council meeting, and then implementation of the two new programs would be effective upon your approval. That'll take questions, comments, discussion.
Thank you. Councilmember Kent.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. I just a couple points about the waiver policy. So we'd have a waiver for the up to the first five special events, right?
Yes.
Okay.
For the budgeted amount, too.
For the budgeted amount.
What we proposed.
All right. So it would become like a first come, first served.
Yes.
So if the first five people get their names in the hat, would have the opportunity. How far out would be? So if someone's putting in their application in January for an event in August, is that how it would work?
And you know, the nature of how the special event applications have been coming to the city, uh-huh. There are returning events, there are new events, and it really varies. We'll get something halfway through a year, so right. Establishing some sort of a timeline on it, this is more flexible to adapt and adjust to. You know, first come, first serve, as you mentioned, so right. There could be the possibility of something in the latter half of the year may come up and say that the funding is exhausted, you know, right. for that year, and it's something that could be considered the following year.
So the sixth, what I'm concerned about or thinking about is if it's further out, so that you have five groups that put in their request in January for something that occurs in July and August, is that, and that's far enough out, so it's not that they have like 3 months to put in a request and get the approval. There's no time limit like that.
No, right. So they could submit it as early as January.
And that's what I was wondering. And then
this goes along too with that's based on what you have budgeted for this year, and also really feeling out the number of events, because we're talking about a fee waiver for events that require road closure of the downtown,
right.
That I think we would want to be careful about going more than five or six or so road closures.
Right, because of the impact on business. How many do we have right now, about?
So there's a couple of existing.
Because I can read three I've just heard of.
Parade and the YMCA Fall Classic.
Right.
Now, Light Up Monroe has had a road closure a year ago, but it hasn't annually had one. So, and we're aware of the potential of two other events this year. So as far as what I'm hearing, we could have about four. So there would be room for a fifth to pop up that we're not aware of.
So unless there's a really big demand, we're probably well within the parameters of the number of events we do have. And I think you've answered all my questions. So I'll do it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Mike, on one of the first bullets that you talked about adjusting or changing, it was must have an approved special event permit. I'm sorry, can you just restate what you had phrased it to?
Sure. It's restated as the applicant otherwise satisfies all applicable criteria for issuance of a special event permit pursuant to the chapter of it. And the reason behind that is the you're talking about a fee waiver and the special event permit. So about when do you collect the fees? Kind of chicken and the egg. And so this gets around that.
Okay.
So we could, if there's a request for the fee waiver, we don't really tangle it up with the.
Okay. So the procedure down below where it says submit a completed special event permit application, that still is needed along with the form in order to get the waiver.
Correct.
Even though you don't have to have it, I guess, approved
Well, this is to
up above it says you have to have an approved special event permit, but you change that language, but then the procedure bullet down below
is that they would submit it, so then the approvals would occur after submission of the special event application and the fee waiver form.
Okay, so you do have to submit the permit, not necessarily be approved for it,
right, so then they would
be eligible for a waiver.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
So we're aware of two, or we have two, we're aware of two more potentially. I guess, you know, I'm just looking at it from the business side of it, right, where we want to do this to try to incent the activity, but are we incenting or are we just giving a discount to events that we already know are going to happen? Because from my math, we're going to hit that $5,000 mark on stuff we already know that's going to happen.
Well, I would say, like I mentioned, there are two returning events that, again, making an assumption that they may apply for it, they may not.
Okay.
This will be offered, it would meet the criteria.
Sure.
But the two new proposed events, we haven't actually received an application, so they may be, figuring out is this going to pencil out, and then this kind of gets back to what sort of drove this is the feedback we got from not just returning events, but events that have happened in the past and haven't come back. This example, car show, shows in the past, farmers markets, various locations, things like that.
So the 5,000, because when I read it, is the $5,000 limit, because there was a couple statements that were made, is it more for to mitigate against the too much activity of road closures down there, or is it just a budget issue? I guess
well, it's a combination of both.
Okay.
I'm looking at the $15,000 that the council budgeted,
the art intent commission
and then the downtown events, but also, yeah, I think they also like just being cognizant of the interruptions that street closures cause downtown. Because I'll say on the flip side, on the west side of town, there are three road closures throughout the season over on Franz Boulevard, and we really look hard at additional road closures in that area.
Because
the feedback we've gotten from residents and businesses in that side of town.
Because there's a piece of me that leans more towards, I like having the process in place for reviewing for potential fee to waive, and that we budget the $5,000. But I wouldn't, if you don't put a hard on it that hey, you hit the five and you're done. Just from the standpoint, if we have an event that, do you see where I'm going?
That's correct, and I think you posted it, and I think Councilman Camp proposed. Or in your question and comment was about that limit that we could always go back to council.
That's really what I'm looking for, and look at, hey, what is the event? What is the potential economic benefit? It may offset, another $1,000 fee waiver or whatever. But if the intent is to try to have more activity. I don't see where we get that if we set the budget at where we kind of expect the amount of events that we already have. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So that's just my thoughts. But I like the idea.
You know,
on the idea just for Councilmember Cutterback.
And it is something too that year-to-year budget-wise too, we can kind of give you a little feedback as far as. Yeah, the events, what's occurred this year, what we anticipate, if we hear anything for next year, and that could go into, the budget request.
Sure.
Okay. Any other comments from council members? Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Mike, in regards to the art policy, so if I'm reading this correctly, it looks like the way it's written out is that if a sculptor was to submit a piece of art, then we're essentially purchasing that and it becomes a permanent fixture down there?
Right.
Okay. When going through this process and reviewing other policies, I mean, was there any discussion or thought given about maybe not necessarily purchasing the art, but having some sort of kind of sculpture rotation that we go through, and how does that play in?
That's a great question, and with this policy, we see it as something that can grow as our program would grow in the community. And so what we looked at first is, you know, what the city council budgeted, and kind of what could that get, you know, for the downtown. And so that kind of focused on commissioning APs. But in the policy, call for art, we even have relocation. There actually, in some of the research we did, there were clauses about, you know, say temporary art, rotating, that sort of thing. So we just didn't want to put an elaborate policy with say things that are more like, say, in communities that have the more developed programs, if we're not even focusing on that this year.
Sure.
You know, so this really can cover what we're focusing on this year, and I would expect and hope that we would grow in this area, and then this policy can grow as well.
Okay. So, and I appreciate that, and I like that. I mean, I remember growing up having a very similar downtown, and even as a kid, you know, going through the downtown and checking out the art, and it would change every, I think, 6 months, and you'd have something new down there. It was always a lot of fun, so. Thank you.
All right, are there any other questions or comments? Okay, so staff will bring this back forward next week. Will this go on consent, or new business?
It'll be final action.
Final action. Okay. So we'll bring that bring this back forward in final action with the revisions that Mr. Farrell had, and also going over the park policy. I'm sorry, the art policy with our attorney. Okay. Great. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
All right. The next item that we have on our agenda, Ms. Sasky, do you have anything to add from the Monroe Arts Council? Thank you very much for coming this evening.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Thank you. So we'll move on to council member reports. Let's start off with the City Council Legislative Affairs Committee, and that would be council member Kent.
That'd be me. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Very productive night. We started going through the Monroe City Council rules of procedure and got a third of the way through, updating it from 1902. There are going to be a few changes that will be brought forward to council for hopefully a lively debate. We had a lively debate in the committee tonight, so I'm looking forward to that. That's the high point. We had I think that was it. The work plan comes back here for approval or review?
So we'll have the work plan. What was the plan on the work plan? It doesn't require formal approval, so.
Correct. We'll bring it back to the council and they can give a head nod type of situation.
Okay. Next week.
Yeah.
That'll be good. All right. So we'll be looking at the work plan for the legislative committee. I think that's about it.
Are there any questions for the legislative committee? All right, seeing none, Community Transit Board of Directors meeting. Councilmember Cutterback.
Yeah, so I need a copy of Liz. Copy it for me. So this is just a highlight. We had a board meeting, and a couple of key things that were discussed at that board meeting are service change that's going to happen possibly in September 2016, if you look on your second page. And then there's a service change proposal happening in March 2017. And then if you look on your last page,
they have to go through public meetings in order to vet these service changes. So there's a list of the public meetings that are happening throughout the community to talk about these service changes. And if you look on the second page for the changes that are happening in September 2016, they align these changes to their strategies and their strategic plan. They have a six-year plan. They actually have a 20-year plan that they've been working on. They have a six-year plan, and then they have a three-year plan, and then they have a one-year budget plan. So all that ties together. And some of the key strategies are the themes are going more places more often, making what we have better, and that's in the September change, and then the March change would focus on making what we have better. And so they're also focusing on Highway 9, and they're doing more transit options along Highway 9, taking it all the way past Bothell, all the way up to Tulalip. So actually, Snohomish, the city, is going to become a hub for that. It's going to become a station, same with Lake Stevens. So we're looking at that. A couple other key things that were discussed at that meeting, they now have their transit development plan, and it is the plan. It's on their website, and it's a plan from 2016 to 2021, and it just focuses on kind of increased service. The main topics are increased service, which is increased hours. A second line of SWIFT, which will go from Boeing directly to Canyon Park and back. And then that has been approved in the president's budget. They're getting federal funding for that quite a bit. It's quite a huge project. And so they just have to know whether it's going to be approved by Congress this year. So that's the last step, but it's in the president's transportation budget. And then just new routes that are going to increase kind of transit options throughout the county. But really, they think Snohomish, what was discussed at this meeting, is funny because Joe Nigel's an alternate also, and they think Snohomish and Lake Stevens is East County. And so for us out here and looking at, we have service in the morning that comes every 3 hours, but then it's incredibly limited the rest of the day. So it's just interesting to hear. So I think as I go through the process and sit on the board or sit as an alternate, it's going to be interesting to hear plans for true East County down the road. So, but take a look at that. If you have any questions, let me know. I'm just kind of diving into all this right now. They've got a lot of stuff going on.
Thank you. Councilmember Kim?
Thank you. If you don't mind, I have a question. But I think you answered the first part, is where exactly the limit to East County was and Lake Stevens. I just love it.
Yes, no much.
So it just stops, and it's just the vast wilderness beyond that.
Yes.
I've been getting questions from people about 424, whether or not they're going to increase service there. So if that's an option, if you could look into that. Or
I can look into that, and I can't remember, it's 424.
That's
424.
That's the Seattle Monroe.
No.
Direct line.
No, there is not pre-service there.
Okay.
I mean, if you look right here, it'll say the route number. And
right, that's what I saw.
They were looking at increasing not in Monroe, but in other routes.
It's not like Siemens. It's not Stonehenge.
Yeah. Sunday hours, because at one point they had taken that away, including Sunday hours. Holiday hours they increased, but not increasing the frequency of from Monroe to Seattle.
Okay.
That
Thank
was
you.
Not in here.
So I was approached last year about lending support for the 0.3% increase on sales tax, and I was not willing to do that. I asked the question, what are we going to get for the Sky Valley? And the answer was maybe a study. And, maybe they think that we're Northeast King County here. I don't know. But and I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that as snarky as I just did. But the thing is this, is that one of the things that I heard at that meeting where the ask was made for my support was the need to have more people, more trips going from Monroe to Bothell. You know, you've got kids that are not just kids, but adults, well, adults, going to the University of Washington at Bothell. And we need more service along 522. I find it interesting that they would pick Snohomish, a smaller city, rather than Monroe, a larger city, as a hub, because here, as a hub, you could look at connecting down 203 to Duval. You could look at connecting 522 down to 405 and connecting all the way up the Sky Valley. One of the things that was mentioned to me, though, when I was talking about 522 was that there is a gap in the community transit district where the Maltby area some time ago did not vote in favor of incorporating or annexing into the community transit district. So I think it's Sound Transit, actually, that provides service from Monroe. I don't think it's actually community transit.
Yeah, there's a couple gaps where actually community transit does not provide the service. So there's a big map that shows exactly that. I saw it briefly at the meeting.
Yeah.
I can't remember off the top of my head. It could be in here, though, which is on their website. They have all the information on their website.
Okay. Well,
but they look at Highway 9 as incredibly important because it's parallel to I-5.
Right.
Kind of trying to reduce off of I-5 and just put more service on 9, which it surprised me, the limited service they had on 9, and then to get it up to this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because now they're going to have service from Lake Stevens to Tulalip, and Lake Stevens down to, Ash Way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're going to have that every 30 minutes throughout most of the day versus what they had before, which was very limited.
Well, thank you very much for going, and I think that the message from Monroe, I think we all would support having more frequent service from Monroe to, you know, to the east side, Seattle, and it's really important to have a voice on there, so thank you.
Yeah.
All right, I think that takes care of the committee reports, so let's go around for the individual council reports. Councilmember Scarborough.
Nothing to report.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
Just a couple things to point out, kind of more upcoming. Director Farrell, we're ready to go this week for the kickoff of baseball season for Underground Parks there. but I think the thing that I also wanted to just kind of highlight, we have the ribbon cutting next Monday on the 14th up at the high school. And if anything, what this week for me is just kind of illustrating even more is our need for, you know, our Lake Tahoe Park kind of plan, where I know we've got the grant in for that. But just the focus there, that even if we don't get it this year, that there is definitely a need there. And then also the lighting side of things, I know that's on the second tier of that. But as we start looking at stuff in regards to the Monroe Coalition, there is a ton of research that shows the correlation between kids that are involved in activities, how they're able to stay away from the exact type of substance abuse problems and keep their grades up and all that kind of stuff. And field availability is a huge component of being able to provide those opportunities for youth. And there's a couple things that work against us, especially this time of year for us on field availability. That is daylight hours. Right, and it just hit me when I was driving here today, and I see the lights on at the old Memorial Stadium, and there's lacrosse going on, you know, there. We don't have that in any other, you know, area. Our youth football teams utilize that space. We rent lights, and that's how we're able to do that. But there, you know, this time of year in the spring, there's kind of that void of field availability, and then when you put on top of that the weather that descends upon us. You know, we have one field now, here are two fields where we're, you know, potentially going to be able to use for field availability. It's just, I just think it just puts even more focus on our continued support around those ventures and making sure that if we get turned away this year, that we continue to support that as a council, and we continue to support Mike on making sure that it is a high priority. That's my two cents.
What time on the 14th?
The time on the 14th?
4 p.m.
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock. And I, or 3 o'clock. I have 3 o'clock on my calendar.
They called, told me 4.
They told me 4 also.
Bruno, that, oh, you know what? It is 4 p.m. I have it on mine for 3, so I don't, not like.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
Nothing tonight.
Thank you. Councilmember Kemp.
Nothing, but that brings up a point, the possibility of a quorum
yep.
that night.
At the ribbon?
At the ribbon
cutting for the, okay.
So,
I won't be there, but. Okay.
That's all I've got.
All right. Thank you. Councilmember Asmundson.
Thank you. I'll have a more in-depth Board of Health report next week, but I did want to let council know that I did attend the ad hoc meeting on last Thursday for the Board of Health in regards to our partnership and with the Ruckles Health Center, who's kind of working with the board and finding ways to, or hopefully helping us find a way to move the board forward. And kind of where we're at with this point is they've gone through and they've drafted up the assessment that they're going to roll out, and the committee last week we gave some feedback on some of the questions that they're answering and so forth, and then between now and essentially the end of June, they're going to be reaching out to the community members throughout Snohomish County. Could be the mayors of the cities that we represent, city council members, healthcare providers, school board, city staff. I mean, could be a variety of folks. So if you do get the call from someone from Ruckles House, it's likely going to be Kevin or, your name is Lori, that'll be calling. It's just two people making the phone calls. Please take the opportunity to give feedback. It is, the assessment takes about an hour, so it is going to take a little bit of time, but it's going to go into some detail, and it's going to, you know, kind of state, you know, the condition of the health as far as these are some of the challenges we're looking at. These are some options that the Board of Health has considered. What's your feedback? What would you suggest otherwise, and go from there? So I just ask that if you do get the call, you know, please take the opportunity and the time to work with them and answer their questions as truthfully as you can, as obviously. But after our retreat coming up next Tuesday, I'll hopefully have a little bit more detail, but certainly more detailed Board of Health report. Outside of that, I understand that there's a really epic dodgeball tournament in town coming up on Saturday, so could be fun to watch.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Nothing tonight.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Yes, I did have a question about in the, oh, what's the Public Works report? As part of my, I don't know if now is a good time to ask that or.
Why don't we wait just a moment? We'll be right sure. with him. Yeah.
So, other than that, let's see, Thursday is the affordable housing breakfast. I'm going to that. I don't know if anybody else is going to be there, but be there. That's it.
Thank you. Let's go out to staff. Mr. Worthen?
Just, you probably all have your passwords memorized for your to log in and get your emails. So we are going to change them this week.
Oh, thank you.
It has been time. So
awesome.
Somebody from my group will reach out to you and change them and let you know what they are so you can log in. As always, if you need difficulties, you can come in and can help you get back in. So, but we need to change it every 90 days. So congratulations, you get 90 days.
Thanks for the heads up.
Yeah.
Okay, questions for Mr. Worthen. Councilmember Hanford.
Thanks. We can choose the password, is that correct? Okay, good.
You can.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Can you mention the two positions? Yeah, never mind. Okay. Sorry. Mr. Farrell.
Thank you. The last couple days I've attended the Rural Tourism Workshop Series at Public Church, Monday and Tuesday. It's put on by the Snohomish County Tourism Bureau and the Snohomish County Office of Economic Development. I gotta say, it was really informative and just interactive, and I've really been enjoying participating in this. We have stakeholders. It covers the Skykomish and Snohomish river valleys, so anywhere from Skykomish out to Lake Stevens. And there's representatives from governments, agencies, from associations, and business owners. In Monroe, we have representation from some local business owners, concerned citizens, associations, Chamber of Commerce, and of course, the city. Yesterday and today, the series focused on visioning and planning workshops for tourism, basically. And we're looking at it as a region-wide, so everybody has their input, and it's been a wonderful series. There's four more of these workshops in March, end of March, April, and it concludes in May. And one of the outcomes of this will be that the Snohomish County Tourism Bureau's strategic plans being updated, and so the information from this workshop series would be incorporated in their update. And loud and clear from all the participants, we would like to pass the workshop series to set up a group such as the workshop group, where you have representatives from all of these communities in this valley to meet regularly to help cross promote and just assist each other with tourism, and just really look at what our region can offer in that area. So it's pretty, pretty good stuff.
Thank you. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Farrell? Okay. Ms. Nelson?
No report.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Osaki?
I have a few items. One is we have not heard anything from the Growth Management Hearings Board Eastern Grove. So as soon as we do get a decision, we'll send out an email to council and let you know. As Mayor Thomas alluded to, Melissa Place is going to be leaving the city next week and going to another jurisdiction. I think her last day will be, we're still talking about what her last day will be. It could be as early as Wednesday, so if you have a chance to visit City Hall and say goodbye to her, that might be the last day that she's here. Last week, we held a permit processing stakeholder meeting and involved master builders, some major developers in town, consultants, and the Chamber of Commerce. And just a few things that came out of that. The prioritization from that group, or at least a couple people in that group, was look at your codes and look at anything in your codes that can reduce timelines, and there's some opportunities to do that. Kind of the second priority was look at your application forms and make sure that what you're asking from an applicant is consistent with what your code says and nothing more, and don't say less and then start turning an application and I'm told I have to train something again. So an alignment of what the code says with the application forms. And kind of the third item that was a priority was an improved permit process system. And what they meant by that was many jurisdictions have basically 24/7 type of permit processing system where I can make applications online anytime during the day and I can request inspections anytime during the day. We don't have that right now, so we'll take a look at that. It may mean more cost, but we'll just take a look at that as well. But on the other side, some of the comments we got was one of the residential developers does work through a variety of different jurisdictions in the area, and they have a staff person that goes around and processes permits on their behalf. And what she says, when she told that permit processing person that she was going to come to Monroe, what type of comments do you have to offer Monroe? The response was, Monroe is the best community we have to work with. And then there was another consultant that basically said, anytime he gets a potential client who says that he has a potential project in Monroe, that actually makes him feel good because he knows he'll get treated well and the permit processing system will be pretty good. So there were some positive statements, but then there's also some very good statements about what we can do better. And so we'll be working on that during the course of this year. And then finally, I have not forgotten Councilmember Kask's question about sub-regional centers. And I might send an email out to the council, but a simple answer to that is we could do anything we want here in Monroe in terms of designating a sub-regional center here, but not all sub-regional centers are alike. And so a sub-regional center in Pierce County actually is going to carry more weight within that county than a sub-regional center would here in Snohomish County. And part of the reason it came up at your meeting was the Puget Sound Regional Council wants to try to standardize what a sub-regional center is across all the four county jurisdictions it deals with. And so I'll send out a short memo just kind of giving you a comparison to Pierce County. But down there, you actually get more points in their advisory decisions on way and transportation projects. Here, I don't sense that it's Snohomish County. When projects are reviewed for recommendation to Puget Sound Regional Council, that the center's criteria weighs into that decision as much as it does in Pierce County. So I'll try to flesh that out in an email to everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, any questions for Mr. Osaki? All right, seeing none. Chief?
Nothing this evening.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Feilberg?
Nothing besides answering Councilmember Hamburg's questions.
Okay. Can you take us just through a couple of the highlights of your report and then answer Councilmember Hanford's questions?
Okay. We're doing lots of projects. You've noticed that Turning Place has asphalt, or at least asphalt treated base on it, and they're busy working on the sidewalks right now. And pretty much, let's see, we're going to be just the contract for the Columbia Elizabeth Street water mains. You did that tonight. Mm-hmm. So those will be starting soon, and then after we put the water mains in, we will reconstruct those streets. Rickmont, we're busy working on the design on that, which is the replacement of the water line up there and then rebuilding that. That's the biggest one, which is basically taking the whole street down the gravel and starting over again.
Can you point out which ones also are funded by the sales tax and for the 1/10%?
That one.
The road portions of Columbia and Elizabeth and Rickmont are the Transportation Benefit District funded projects. Also, let's see, what's Great Road? It's not. Elizabeth, or the one I already said, it's not. And then we have Fremont Friends Boulevard, 173rd Pell Street, Columbia Street, 182nd Avenue, North Street are going to be overlaid as part of the Transportation Benefit District, and then a variety of streets around town are going to be either chip sealed or fog sealed, such as Ferry Street, Mountain View Road, Sawyer Street, Sykes Drive, Teddy Avenue, Van Avenue, Wales Street, Hen Street, Madison Street, and Woods Creek Road. So there, right now we're working on pricing on those, so that may expand or contract depending on how much it ends up costing for a contractor to do that. So because we only have $750,000 to work with this year, so we'll see how far that money goes when we get bids in for those types of rehabilitations.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. On page 3 of 11. Okay, page 3 of 11, 179th Avenue Southeast.
Okay.
The on the, was it one block over, two from the school, from Main Street, I think was the homeowner that had come to council and talked about, we put the sidewalk in there, it's going to like make a yard have nothing. And she was very concerned about
it. It's the house on the corner of 160th, I think it is. So the first block of Main Street. Yeah. When that property was subdivided by Short Flat years ago, that 10 feet was dedicated by the plan to the city, so effectively it's going to be right away.
I realize that. She had come with some options and alternatives. If my memory serves me correctly, we looked at all those alternatives and they wouldn't work for code reasons, things like that.
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure I understood correctly. Thanks.
Does anybody else have any questions?
It was on 179th, you're talking about?
Okay, and you will have noted that the Turney Place is up in the schedule to anticipated completion May of 2016. And we will have a brief ceremony for the opening of that road. Because of the way that construction works and because I don't want to hold, we don't want to hold something up, opening it up, you may end up getting a notice that we're having an event in a fairly short time frame, like a week or so. And so we will we'll let you know as soon as we know when the most probable time is that we can open it up to traffic, and we'll be inviting our partners from the PUD and also from the state and TIB and all of you to attend that. So just watch your emails, please. Councilmember Kadebeck?
I just want to say kudos. All these projects are going to be very visible, and I think community members are going to be very pleased. I mean, the Turney Place, when that opens, is just, that's a great avenue for another avenue. The 179 sidewalks, if that's open by the time school starts in September. The Woods Creek going from Oaks or kind of towards the downtown through there. And the West Main sidewalks to connect the high school and down to provide that. Those are all going to be done this year, it looks like, and incredibly visible, which I think will make a big difference on community members and students and so many people walk. And it'll just encourage the walkability of our community. So just kudos for getting all those done. And they seem on time, they seem on budget. So I know that's a big deal when you have so many projects going on. So thank you.
Thank you. One of the things that I wanted to make certain that we took just a bit of time was to go over the TBDV projects. A lot of those, many of those projects like fog sealing and chip sealing and whatnot, we do a lot of ribbon cuttings and groundbreakings for brand new projects, but what we don't do is recognize when we're actually maintaining stuff. And I think it's important that we recognize the great work we're doing, even with those boring things like fog sealing, chip sealing, and all that other good stuff that's important to maintain our infrastructure. Councilmember Kemp.
Thank you. Just wanted to echo what Councilmember Kadebeck said about all the projects and all the hard work. I would have a request, though, those of us who have to commute, if you could make any ribbon cutting or ceremonies like that late in the day, if during the week, otherwise on a weekend, would be much better for my schedule.
Would you be able to do early in the morning, like at a 7, if it ended up falling at that?
I know what time my day starts.
I know what time mine does, too.
I could.
Okay.
The same kind of.
I was thinking if we did like
that you have.
If we were to do early or late, it would allow us to capture people. So we'll work through the details.
Trying to picture a ribbon cutting at 7 a.m.
In the summer, not so bad.
It'll probably be raining and yeah.
No.
Okay.
Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right. Anything further for Mr. Feilberg? Okay, so just on to the agenda on my report. First, if you go ahead and take a look at Monroe this week, I did attend the Economic Alliance, I'm sorry, not the Economic Alliance, but the PSRC's Economic Development District. Thank you. EDD. I was thinking EED. So the Economic Development District, which is part of the PSRC, on Thursday last week, or Wednesday afternoon last week. And one of the things that they're going to be doing, they're starting this year, is doing a new economic strategy for the region. And one of the things that unfortunately they didn't make clear until the end of the presentation was that their idea, because of the macro scale they're dealing with, is sort of import-export. And one of the So one of the things that the Economic Alliance of Snohomish County will be working with the cities such as ours that aren't in that metropolitan core is to making certain that there are economic development policies on a regional level that relate to us here. You know, we do have boats that we saw that are $100,000 that are sent outside of our region. We have other things that are sent outside of our region. I know that they're not planes like in Everett or Seattle, but we also generate tourism and things like that that bring money in from outside of the region. And we're going to, again, I'm going to work with the Economic Alliance and other cities to make certain that there's something in that document that recognizes economic development here. Does anybody have any questions for me about PSRC Economic Development District? Okay. Dave, Mr. Osaki did a great job on the permit processing stakeholder meeting. I, too, was very happy to hear about the positive words that were shared with staff and look forward to resolving some of the things that we could do better with. We had a meeting with the Roosevelt Water District. That was Monday last week, and I forgot to report out on that at council. Gene, do you want to say anything about that?
Actually, it's on the agenda for next week.
Oh, it's on the agenda for next week. And so the short end of that, the very summary level on that, is that there are some water lines that are currently serving customers of the Roosevelt Water District that are within the city limits. And our water plan shows that they'll be served by the city. And so the purpose of the meeting was to talk about transition and things like that. As you know, there's two developments going on Roosevelt Road right now, one by Quadrant and one by Seattle. Seattle Pacific, and so they're going to be taking water from the city, even though those properties before development were taking water from Roosevelt. So we were talking through transition. You'll hear more about that next week. State Route 522. So hopefully you saw the email from earlier today. The 2016 negotiated compromise supplemental budget became available around 1:30 today. What happened was the House made one proposal that involved 522. The Senate had their transportation budget. What happened by 1:30 today is that they harmonized the two, so they came up with a compromise, and that compromise included funding for... So what it included was freeing up the $10 million in the Connecting Washington transportation package that was adopted last year, so that it is not just restricted to the interchange, but can also be used for the widening along 522. Now, that's money that's not available until 2025. I'll underscore the fact that the widening was not even in Connecting Washington. So this is a very positive step to be able to have that used, available for the whole corridor. But in addition to that, the transportation supplemental budget includes a proviso where the $1 million that we get from the federal government, the state gets as a whole from the federal government, for corridor sketch programs, that they're going to prioritize 522. So it's not engineering design, but and it's certainly not laying down asphalt, but what it is it is beginning the process of the preliminary design and engineering. And I have to reiterate, we may go, you know, that's not asphalt, it's not widening the road today, but this time last year it was not even... There was no funding for anything for it. So, you know, we've gone from zero to having something, and that's a positive movement. Now, with that said, we got an email today at 6:46 p.m. The Senate had just passed the Transportation 2016 Negotiated Compromise Supplemental Budget, and it was then going to the House for concurrence. So, for all I know, sitting here right now, it could have already passed, and then it'll be just subject to the governor's review and... That's that. Does anybody have any questions about that? Okay. Councilmember Hanford.
Just want to say kudos to you, Mayor, and our lobbyist team for getting some action, some movement.
Thank you.
It may be glacial, but it's movement. So.
Thank you. And I want to add, too, that I have been in contact with the county executive's office as recent as this evening. In fact, I was meeting with staff at 4:30 today and ended up getting a phone call that I had to interrupt that meeting, thank you both, to talk to the chief of staff for the executive's office about applying for two grants that could lead to actual construction through the federal government. One is related to the FAST program, and the other one is, help me here.
Tiger.
Thank you. The Tiger Discretionary Grant Fund. I was wondering, C is for cookie? Those are claws. I got it now. Turning red. So I'm still working with the county and the state to have somebody come up with the $20,000 or $40,000 that it's going to take to apply for those grants. And, you know, if for some reason it doesn't work in this grant cycle, hopefully there will be money in 2 years that we can apply for the construction grant money. But we're going to continue to work on it. We're going to continue to keep this at the forefront of what's important to real East County, the Sky Valley. And so that's where things are with that. And we'll continue to update you as things go on. So thank you, council member. Does anybody else have any questions? All right. The last thing I want to say that I'm aware of from community development is that we have a number of... Oh, take a look at the left pane of Monroe this week. You'll see that our REIT is up fairly high compared to last year. Those are home sales. Those are property sales. Our building permits are down right now compared to last year, but we're understanding from Mainview and actually Seattle Pacific that we may see a number of building permit applications coming in over the next 4 weeks or so.
Potentially before June 30th.
Okay, before June 30th.
Goes into effect.
Okay. So we anticipate having that number increase and probably surpass last year. So as you're looking at that pane on the left of Monroe this week, I just want you to be aware of those items. All right. Let's go ahead and move on to Mr. Brazel. Mr. Brazel.
All I've got is the draft agenda for March 15th, 2016. Consent agenda. Under new business, we'll be discussing Roosevelt Water that was introduced this evening. Authorize mayor to sign consultant agreement for the Main Street program, the RFP. Under final action, we'll be looking at the approval of the downtown events and public art policies. And the council member reports. Additions or deletions?
I see none.
We'll also have the Legislative Affairs Committee work plan on next week's agenda.
Does anybody have any questions, additions, deletions to the agenda or extended agenda? Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. There's an email that came out, Ed and Kirk, about P4 next week. Are we going ahead and canceling that?
You're not going to be there, right?
I'm not going to be there anyway, but we can adjust the agenda if so.
Yeah, we can cancel.
Okay.
Okay, so we're canceling P4 next week?
Yep.
Okay. Perfect. Anything further? Okay, Councilmember Gamble?
I may be a little late next week. I'm attending a meeting up in Marysville in the evening, so
okay.
It'll be a push.
Okay. So we'll expect you to be a little bit late. All right. Anything further?
I do not.
Do we have no other business this evening for council? Councilmember Hanford?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
We have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Camp to adjourn. All those in any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you very much. Thank you for your service. Have a great evening. We're adjourned.